and inadequate insurance, and I don't think that's the kind of innovation the city stands for. Thank you.
So let me follow up again on the same basic question as Mr. Alemi. So you've raised a bunch of new issues here about other regulatory impacts on EcoCab. Are these changes in the city's regulations that are incorporated in our proposed rules, our proposed ordinance here today, or are these other administrative decisions by the Bureau that you're disadvantaged by?
Combination of both. So under the current city code before the proposed amendments, the city had interpreted its code under Frank Dufay's leadership to allow it to accept insurance that was less than A-minus, AM best, if they felt that it was equivalent and adequate. And that had been the determination that the city had provided. Information was provided about Demotech rating as being an equivalent rating system that deals with metrics like, does an insurance company pay, is it rate, is it admitted, all of these other things that were important to the city. And the city interpreted its old code to say, yeah, fine, no problem. The city's old code used to say that with respect to colors, that the words to the effect that the cab company is painted in the colors of the company, some distinctive logo, and that was recently interpreted to mean, no, it has to be one color. And so the proposed amendments actually ratchet it down, the color of the company. And that's a problem for EcoCab and other sort of electric vehicle-based companies, because it's real hard to come by electric vehicles. And when they're available to purchase, you need to buy what you can buy. And they don't all come in white. So that's the issue there. There are some things in the proposal that are new in the sense that the proposal is trying to address innovation, is trying to recognize this new type of technology. But in doing that, it doesn't recognize all of the new technology that is available to taxi companies as well, to kind of come into the now and to be hailed and to pay and all those things with an app. And so it says, okay, so Uber gets to have that, but taxis are stuck with this old school stuff that the industry is moving away from. And as a matter of fact, you can't get a new electric vehicle that is compatible with the taxi meters. You're having to take these beautiful electric cars and Frankenstein them in order to get them to work on this old technology. So that's the new problem that's being introduced. It's stifling your innovation. And there are simple, easy amendments that I propose that address these basic issues.
Ms. Kellington, this is the first I've heard of this issue of you're having a hard time dealing with the old meter technology. So
yes.
I'm certainly willing to have a discussion about that, but it'll be hard to act on it today when it's the first I've even heard of it.
Yeah, it's helpful to hear this, but it is new to me also.
And aren't these types of things that you can petition to have addressed in the rules?
No, that's the problem, is that the rules say taxis have to have taxi meters that couldn't be GPS-based, which is what these new systems are, and they have to be certified by the National Type Evaluation Program, NTEP. And NTEP has a subcommittee that is dealing with GPS systems, you know, these kinds of apps that I gave you these articles about, as well as the Uber types of apps, but they're just not ready yet. They don't know how to certify these systems.
I have a solution.
Oh.
Why don't we propose that in the implementation phase of this, for 6 months or a year or whatever, the director has the explicit authority to waive any code that doesn't present an unreasonable risk to public safety and health if, in a case like this, there is some benefit to innovation or cost or experimentation or whatever. I would be very comfortable, Commissioner Novick, giving the director a catch-all for anything during the implementation phase that where you're putting essentially a round peg through a square hole, and there's a case made that it doesn't impact public health and safety, but there's a public policy reason to provide a delay or an exemption, mostly a delay, I would think, because we're talking about a phase-in. And it would seem to me there ought to be that provision anyway, and what kind of council oversight over that we'd have to be determined.
But let me just ask the city attorney, is it legal for the council to delegate authority to waive code to a director?
Well, even if it's not, I'm not even suggesting potentially a waiver. There could be, since all of these laws have, since we routinely deal with things called implementation schedules and phase-ins and things of that nature, it just seems to me that we could classify certain things as subject to a phase-in and give a little more latitude during the phase-in period.
Commissioner, I don't think this is a matter of phasing in. I think that what ECOCAB is asking for is a change to longstanding rules about taxi meters, and I am reluctant to suggest that the director should, on her own, undertake a review of those rules. I mean, I think that this is an issue that we can take up as a standalone issue as to whether we need to change the rules for what taxi meters look like.
Commissioner, then I'm pitching one of a number of options. We could do it. An alternative would be to have an informal, the equivalent of a recap process for PBOT, where as these issues come up, they can petition the director and the commissioner in charge. If you think it's meritorious, then they could come back to us for tweaks from time to time.
Yeah, so let me suggest this. I think this is a very good discussion, but I want to later in this hearing call the director and relevant staff up to talk about some of this. Because this is new to us, that's fine. No, not being critical of you. But this council has to deal with lots of arcane issues, whether it's how, you know, what the height of an apartment building should be as it steps down to an adjacent neighborhood, or whether an assistant pool leader is a classified member of our union or not. Well, likewise here, we've got arcane details about insurance that this council has been wrestling with for months now while we've been trying to resolve the question of do TNCs operate in our city and how? And now you've raised a whole new set of issues about do our existing regulations disadvantage cab companies, and is that even more of a problem now that there's TNC competition? And Mr. Alemi's concern is similar. So I like Commissioner Fish's suggestion in concept. We'll get to whether or not it works in reality. But someone needs to sort through these technical issues and make a decision. That could be the city council, but maybe not, because what kind of meters you use is probably not best decided by the five of us. So,
no, Mayor, and I think that's why, you know, I think at least each of our bureaus has some administrative process for pursuing hardship or appeals and things. So I'm just flagging. But there's a related issue that you raised. I just want to give you a chance to elaborate on. So we have been thinking about the insurance issue primarily from the through the lens of consumer protection. So we're thinking about the driver, the passenger, and the person from the public who could be injured in an accident. So it's basically the three people, the driver, the passenger, and someone crossing in front of a car and getting hit and injured. And so we've been trying to figure out how to fairly appropriate liability in those circumstances. So we've talked about minimum standards, we've looked at different periods, we've asked the question who's primarily liable, we've dug a little deeper into insurance law generally, we've had a spirited disagreement about what the limit should be, but we have not spent a lot of time looking at this question from the point of view of the city's liability.
Yeah.
And I would say that using the mayor's metaphor, this is one of those cold issues that we ought to get right. And so I haven't heard a lot about the interplay between a rating and the extent to which the city as a third-party insured has confidence that its liability is covered by an insurance company. So could you just – it's not an issue that we're necessarily up here experts on. Could you just go a little deeper on that question?
Thank you, Commissioner Fish. That's an excellent question. So there are essentially, as relevant to that question, two kinds of insurance policies and companies. There are companies and policies reflecting admitted status and non-admitted. Excuse me. And non-admitted companies and non-admitted policies don't pay into the state's insurance safety net. And so when they are too big to fail, and they fail, there is no compensation available. There's no safety net for any of the persons associated with that policy, whether it's a claimant or named insured. Excuse me. And that's where the city comes in, because its laws Oh, bless you. Thank you. Now you're going to have my cooties. Thank you.
You'll have his, one or the other.
Thank you. And so the city is a named insured, but it would receive no compensation when that company fails. AM Best is a rating company whose matrix is predominantly limited to how big is the company. That's what AM Best is interested in. How big is the company? They're not really very interested in other metrics. Demotech is interested in other metrics. And so too big to fail, that's important. Admitted, not important. Not admitted, that's important. Do they pay claims? That's important. And so back in the day, the city of Portland accepted Demotech, A-minus or even B-rated insurance companies, because the city of Portland was protected. Those companies paid into the safety net. They, you know, had good histories. They were solid companies. And the taxi companies were able to provide an affordable product with the city being protected. Well, now, AM Best, James River, is a non-admitted company. So if James River has made a bad bet on Uber, and if Uber has to start paying during, you know, period one, and James River fails, City of Portland's out of luck because it has no coverage. The insurance companies, the taxi companies don't like that because they want to have the safety net. They don't want to be sitting there looking at an injured claimant or the City of Portland and say, we're going to somehow try to accommodate that claim. That's the issue.
Mary, I do want to, get along with the rest of the testimony, but Mr. Breguer is prepared to respond to a number of the statements Ms. Culligan has made.
All right, good. Well, let's proceed and then...
I just want to mention to you this issue about the GPS, these new electric cars that we've been getting have this brand new software that is incompatible. So this is a brand new issue, but it just goes to the point that I think particularly you, Mayor Hales, care about, and that's being nimble enough to respond to innovation. And that's why we need these amendments sooner than later.
All right. Okay. Thank you.
I would just point out with respect to your suggestions for meters that as a passenger, I would not be able to tell what the fare is if I'm in the back seat looking, trying to see this.
No, you would. It would be an app-based system, the same thing that Uber uses. That's what we're asking for. And if that's not well-written, then it should be. You could ask your staff to come back with something better if you're interested in that. The point being...
Okay, what if I'm not... I don't have an iPhone and I hail your cab. How do I know what the fare is? I like to watch the fare on my meters.
Can I answer this?
Yeah, please.
Thank you. These GPS-enabled meters are used throughout the world, and so they're just now starting to get used in San Francisco right now. So we would always make sure that the fare was clear and visible to the passenger at all times, according to code. The only thing that we're asking for is that we can use a GPS-enabled meter versus one that's physically connected to the car, because every time they have a software update, it does.
So you'd have that information. Nobody's saying, and that could be a code requirement to have that information. You'd have it whether it's on an app or whether it's sitting on a meter, but you would have it. The only difference is the source. GPS would be the source.
Okay. Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you for letting me. Let me speak. My name is Brian Honeyman. I'm the president of EcoCab. I have just recently been brought into and hired by EcoCab, so I'm a fresh perspective. I actually come from, I've only been in the role for 3 months. I come from the franchise industry where I've worked with a number of large international franchises, where one was a security franchise where we would hire hundreds and hundreds of patrol vehicles. So there's some relative information there. But I've been asked to speak because I thought I would share some brief experience in my 8 weeks from just interviewing people. So I have a sample of about 350 resumes that I've reviewed. I've completed 142 interviews, and I've hired 25 new drivers. And in that, when I first saw some of the documents that we've been discussing, livable wage was one that I could speak to from my franchise experience. I don't have a lot of taxi insurance experience. I'm getting a lot very quickly. However, living wage. So I've met lots of drivers from all the different taxi businesses and companies, some currently employed, checking us out. It's Teslas, it's electric, it's new, it's hip, it's a wage, there's insurance, you know, there's vacation and so on and so forth. So it's attracted a lot of people. I've met a lot of people from Uber and from Lyft. Again, some working, some not working. So obviously those not working will certainly have a bias, and I would understand that from some of the information that I'm gathering, my learning points. Here's some of the learning that I've experienced. Earnings have dropped excessively, and it's hard to pay our expenses is what I hear a lot from the taxi business. From the others, there's a lot of drivers now, and it's sure hard to make $10 an hour. That's challenging. Wait times at the airport. We go to the airport, and we will wait at times 3 hours before we get called up to get a fare, and we sure hope it's a fare that's not going to be close proximity where I'll earn $20 and then have to get back in line and hope that it's not another three-hour wait, which, you know, extrapolate that out over a 12-hour shift and just ask, you know, what is there going to be a cap on the amount of people that will be in the marketplace act as drivers, be them taxi cabs or the Uber and Lyft folks. Then I just, within the last couple of weeks, I saw something on a morning news show where there was an Uber spokesman and, you know, some of the numbers, and I was trying to make them work, $4.3 billion in wages, 400,000 drivers. So just factoring that out, I get about $8,750 in earnings. They made the statement that the average driver works 10 hours a week, which I'm fine with. But just working those numbers, trying to figure out some expenses of which I don't know, but just being logical, it was hard to try and come up with, you know, even $9 an hour. So what's the quality service that we would get representing the city of Portland to people in the city and our residents if we're going to be attracting someone? And then just briefly, I've also been the executive vice president for a security franchise where we would hire hundreds and hundreds of drivers that would be in patrol vehicles. Any driver for the company went through a background test, obviously, check, and they all had to be fingerprinted. We provided fingerprinting service. It's very cheap. It's quick and easy and much more thorough. And then there was cameras, and the cameras that were in the cars were not expensive because I would be the franchisor, so we'd have all the drivers asking. It was a safety tool looking inwards. It was a safety tool looking outwards for all sorts of other people outside the vehicle. And from a quality, attracting the right driver with the right wage, it was a skill development tool that you could be sitting there looking and saying, okay, are we doing the right thing for people? So it was beyond just security. And thank it you. Wasn't an expensive thing.
Okay, thank you very much. Questions? All right, thank you all. Let's take the next, please.
The next three, please come up. Alan Lowden, Lightning, Patrick Montgomery. They'll be followed by Teal Aber-Abel, Mike McDermott, John Orr.
Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Alan Lowden. I've not spoke like this before, so I'm a little nervous. I've been in the taxi business for 30 years. I've driven cabs in four or five different cities. I had built up quite a large clientele in two of those cities based on my attitude and the way I'm fair and honest with my passengers. You want to deregulate the taxi industry, but you have a lot of regulations for Uber. If you are going to accept Uber, I think you need to accept Uber in its entirety, just the way it is, including its business model and the way it operates. Uber allows drivers to drive their own vehicles. Maybe someone does not own a wheelchair-accessible vehicle. Uber allows drivers to drive anytime they want to. Uber does not require a certain driver to drive certain hours as to make sure someone is available 24 hours a day. If you are going to allow market forces to dictate the taxi business, then the customer will call whichever company has a suitable vehicle for them at the time they want it, whether it is Uber or Radio Cab or whoever. As an Uber driver, most, if not all, of my negative experiences were because the riders did not know how to operate the app. I got wrong addresses every day. several times every day, starting the relationship off on a very bad note. This happens to probably all the drivers. Uber is aware of this and does nothing about it. All Uber has to do is make the rider type in the exact address they want to be picked up at. And guess what? No more wrong addresses. This would only take a few seconds, and the rider can save the address so they only have to type it in once, and it would create a lot less stress and heartache for everyone involved. You'd be surprised at how many riders literally go less than half a mile. At least they go short enough distance that only the $5 minimum is charged. Out of this $5, Uber takes $1 for a safe ride and then takes 20% of the rest, $4, which would be 80 cents. Can you imagine how difficult it can be to motivate yourself to be overly exuberant when you know you are only going to get $3.20 and you're pretty sure you will not get a tip because the app does not allow it, Uber discourages it, and even encourages drivers to refuse tips. That is just one more point where Uber is not driver-friendly, but I won't talk any more about that. Uber drivers and riders rate each other on a scale of 1 to 5 stars. A rider can give you a low rating for any reason, maybe by mistake, maybe just having a bad day, personality conflict, misunderstanding. One of my riders gave me a low rating because I used a Garmin GPS unit. Why? Your guess is as good as mine.
You should wrap up soon. Go ahead.
You must maintain a 4.6 stars or you can be deactivated. If half your riders give you 5 stars and half give you 4 stars, that's a 4.5 average. You can be deactivated and never get less than 4 stars. In a court of law, you are able to defend yourself, you are allowed to confront your accuser, and you are assumed innocent until proven guilty. With Uber, if a rider gives you a low rating, you will never know which rider it was or for what reason. A rider gave you a low rating, you're guilty, you're fired, that's it, goodbye.
All right, thank you. Thank you very much. I have to cut you off there.
I just take 5 more seconds?
5 seconds, go ahead.
If one rider gives you 1 star, you need 9 riders that will give you 5 stars to maintain a 4.6 average.
We understand that issue.
No. Can you imagine showing up for work and being told that 10% of your constituents were not happy with you yesterday?
Well, thank you. I'd actually be happy with 10%. Go ahead.
Yes.
Well, you didn't let me finish saying that you would be fired. Well, because 10% weren't happy with you yesterday.
It has to be 51, but we'd all settle for 10%.
That's his point, though. I know, 10% could get him fired.
I know. I understand. Thank you.
My name is Lightning. I represent Lightning Watchdog PDX. I think this comes down to leadership on the insurance, is that the city needs to understand your first obligation is to protect the public. We all know this insurance is too low on the TNCs during period 1, 2, and 3. Or at least one, and we need to increase that limit to 500,000, plain and simple. Now, if Uber and Lyft have a problem with this, like you said, will they just leave? Leave. Just leave. The public safety is number one. You have plenty of money to pay this. And if you're not satisfied, just leave. You have outlying areas that you can still do your business. That comes down to leadership of the city. That comes down to protecting the public. You make that rule to them. They don't like it, leave. Now, another issue I have, again, is pertaining to the caps. I never wanted these caps to just open up the floodgates and let as many drivers as possible. My biggest concern, again, is on the public transportation also, streetcar, TriMet, bus. We need more data to see if we're beginning to lose profits there. It's very important to the taxpayers, to the people that have to maintain these systems, to the values and being able to add money on the infrastructure of transportation. If we're losing money, we're going to continue to lose money in all these other areas. So I want to have, again, take a closer look at this. Now, again, from my position, if Uber and Lyft is not happy, leave. I have always had a concern on the traditional taxi cab companies. Why not just allowing them as a pilot project to have no caps, operate for a year, and decide if we want to let Uber and Lyft back in the market? I don't think we need them here. I think the traditional cab companies can pick up and begin to pick up the customers faster, and they were basically held down by how many cabs they could have. And if we release that to them, push Uber to the side right now because they don't want to pay that higher insurance, and let's just see what happens in the marketplace. And I can assure you, these traditional taxi cab companies will step up. They will provide more quality service. They will pick up their customers on a faster time frame. They need to be given that chance. We don't need Uber and Lyft here. Uber and Lyft is a $50 billion company. They're not going to lose much value by not being in Portland. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Patricia Montgomery, not Patrick Montgomery, to show you it's ironic that I'm talking about fingerprint checks today, because then you'll know who I really am. So I think that there needs to be some driver oversight in the city. There's no oversight. You got all these people operating in the city, and there's nobody who's watching who. The International Association of Transportation Regulator recommends biometric fingerprinting as a gold standard for background checks. I strongly support the city following this gold standard in order to protect the citizens of Portland. Other big cities like New York City, Columbus, Ohio, and Houston do the same. I was looking at this article real quick. It says equally important TNC background checks are name-based checks rather than fingerprint-based checks, which increases the probability of errors. In April in Houston, someone had 24 aliases and 5 different birth dates and 10 different names that got through as a TNC driver. Uber argues that the time to conduct fingerprinting will delay drivers getting on the platform. If that's the case, the city could issue temporary permits. The continuous stories we read in the media about Uber drivers committing crimes are not the soccer moms out there making extra buck. They are often dangerous criminals who have slipped through the cracks of the current background checks. Biometric fingerprinting was safeguarded from this from happening. And I think it's a very important issue that we protect our citizens in this city. The second is the vehicle signage. I think the cabs are all at a disadvantage. They're required to do all this extra stuff. And I think so maybe it's time to drop the idea that transportation providers need to be fully painted, but let's not go so far as to eliminate safeguards. Instead, require all providers to have distinctive branding that can be accomplished with an exterior decal that can be easily identified on a dark and rainy night. I'm alarmed by the trend of hearing about citizens who are waiting for Uber rides climbing into the wrong vehicles. I've seen them downtown, people jumping anything that they can get at any time, especially at 2 o'clock in the morning. This trend is dangerous, particularly for women, because it creates too good of an opportunity for predators to prey on citizens. This just happened a few weeks ago in Portland, someone getting in the wrong vehicle. In addition to a brand decal, vehicles should also be required to display a decal issued by the city of Portland, which confirms that the vehicle and the driver meet all the requirements of 1640. These tiny stickers, you can get this on Amazon. I can put this on my vehicle and go to work for Uber tomorrow and cruise the streets, and I can almost guarantee you at Friday or Saturday night at 2 a.m., somebody will jump in my vehicle. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Does your company require fingerprinting now?
Yes, because we've gone to the bigger contracts. When you have the Portland Public Schools and medical transportation contracts, they require that. I don't know if you guys recall when the SAT, specially attended transportation vehicles, came into service back in the late 1990s and early 2000s. That they didn't require the fingerprinting, and they had a young lady who was mentally disabled, and she was taken out to Lake Oswego and raped in the park. And they came back and required that the medical transportation had to have fingerprinting. This is really an important issue because, you know, you're making a decision to protect the citizens of this city, and there are a lot of people that have too much easy access like this to get into vehicles, and they're not protected. Thank you.
Next,
folks, please. I'll give this copies for you.
All right. Thanks a lot.
We have 8 more signed up, a couple have signed in since we started. The next 3, Teal Abel, Mike McDermott, John Orr. They'll be followed by Ryan Hashagan, Kurt Foster, and Nona Carrasco.
Okay. Good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
Good morning.
Thank you. Thank you for hearing me today. My name is Teal Abel. I'm with New York City Cab Company. We've been around for 44 years. We're the smallest cab company in the Portland area. Currently, we have $1 million automobile insurance, 24-hour dispatch, and cameras in our vehicles. Prior to 2015, April 2015, there were approximately 500 vehicles in the taxi vehicles in the system, for hire vehicles, as you know. Currently, as I don't have exact figures, I had to do rough estimates. There are approximately 1,250 taxis, 5,000 Uber vehicles, Uber, and then 1,500 Lyft. The Ubers were, that was the number that was last disclosed at the last city council meeting. That brings a total of 7,750 vehicles, essentially. According to your report, you're saying that 60% of those rides are being taken by Uber and Lyft. So that would be about 4,650 vehicles that are being used as Uber and Lyft vehicles that are taking rides from the Portland area. 20% of that goes out to California and other areas as far as the income from those. The 20% number essentially is the 4,650 that is 60%, and then 20% of that is approximately 930 vehicles. So basically the revenue from about 930 vehicles, or roughly twice the amount of the previous the 20%, 930 was double the amount of the 500 vehicles that we had before April. So you're using the revenue from those vehicles, double the amount, to go into California and other places. So all that revenue is not kept local. The other issue is that essentially that you're not only stripping the regulations, but you're essentially using, before April we had consistency with the amount of fares that were used. So the public also knew exactly how much they were being charged, and they also knew what responsibility the cab companies had for those passengers. Right now, with using period insurance, this changes the responsibility, and it allows the Ubers and Lyfts of the world to point the finger at other people and other responsibilities. There was an incident with a person that was traveling up via bike up Williams. They got sideswiped by an Uber car. I believe it was period one insurance. The article didn't quite specify, but the person subsequently went end over the passenger or the driver's side door, and now has lost three teeth. He is currently was told by Uber that Uber's not holding any accountability. The insurance company, the private insurance company that the driver had given to the person who was injured, is saying that it's not valid, and so he has to go out and sue Uber and Lyft, he has to go out and sue Uber for his damages. That's a big problem. We've set unprecedented numbers of taxi TNCs in the marketplace, over 7,000, which is it's the highest number that's ever been in Portland. We've never had that in let alone in a 9-month period.
Thank you very much.
Thank
that's
you.
Very helpful. Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. My name is Mike Dermott, and I'm here to discuss with you an important point about passenger safety. I just gave the council clerk over there 5 Uber decals to give to you guys. I bought those for about $5 each, and nobody checked to see if I was an authorized Uber driver. There was no background check. Nobody checked to see if I had insurance. There wasn't any vehicle inspection, and that's how easy it is to impersonate an Uber driver. This quick example highlights critical safety risk. Anyone can easily impersonate an Uber driver. It seems to me that the city has an important obligation to safeguard passengers. The only way this can be done is for the safety to issue vehicle decals that identify each vehicle by number and are issued only after the operator has passed a background check, shown proof of insurance coverage, passed a safety inspection, and shown a DEQ certificate of compliance. Okay, Uber will say that only people who are on the platform are registered Uber drivers, and that Uber passengers need to take responsibility for assuring that the drivers are indeed with Uber. That's fine and dandy until it's at night, it's raining, and with the passenger who's had a couple of drinks. It's easy to imagine that the passenger jumping into the first vehicle with an Uber decal that shows up without double-checking the driver photo and license. Commissioner Novick's proposal suggests merely putting decals like these in the front and back of the car with no permit ID numbers like cabs currently have. This is irresponsible public policy and will place Portland passengers at risk. I urge the City Council to amend the proposed private for hire transportation code to require city issued vehicle decals, which include an identification number, ensuring that the vehicle meets all requirements under Chapter 1640. I don't think that's difficult to accomplish, yet it seems like with the warm and cold debates we're talking about here, it seems like the City Council is willing to compromise on public safety. And I've heard it in the insurance, I've heard it in the trade dress issues, I've heard it in the background checking. The City Council is willing to compromise public safety from what I heard you say to Mr. Kefouri is, do you want Uber to leave town? I mean, if that's really what you're afraid of, Mr. Mayor, then yes, let's have them leave town until they really take our passengers' safety, put that at the forefront. But it seems like they're not willing to do it. They can afford to do it, Mr. Novick. Sir. Mr. Salzman, they can do it, but they don't do it.
Okay, thank you. All right, please, go ahead.
Okay, hey, my name's John, radio cab driver. Got one of these two. So, the other day Uber and Lyft were imploring you to wait for Oregon data, and I think national data is actually more valuable because in a more mature Uber market, you have, the drivers on the road are used to looking for suction cup rings in the front windshield when somebody hits them after driving carelessly because, you hide this. That's what happens, and that shifts not only cost, but that helps their stats because their model requires that the driver in period one gets a rejection from their primary insurance, and then they'll cover it up to some tiny, minuscule amount. So the way you are setting this up mandates that the drivers are either claim liability themselves, commit insurance fraud, or get the claim denied by Uber. So that's what's in your regulations. This is a letter to Uber from the city auditor requesting Mark Wiener's lobbying contract. He was emailed a list of the city's task force as it was formed. And I think that until this issue is cleared up, Uber said that they are going to respond by, I think, the December 6th deadline, or it was December 4th, sometime early December, to get the contract back to the city auditor. But until this is cleared up, the integrity of the whole process is called into question. I think we should wait to finalize anything until this issue is behind us and the city auditor has had a couple of weeks after receiving that info from Uber. Now on to something I prepared. I once heard a quote that I really liked from you, Mr. Hales. Measure twice, cut once. I like that.
You have.
We've taken a lot of time.
Measured
with this.
About four times in this case, but keep going.
I'll come back to that. So I mentioned the city auditor. All right. Still waiting to hear back from Uber, which is kind of an ongoing theme here of Uber eventually getting back with data that cities or Portland or the auditor requests. But I'm curious why Mr. Weiner, an Uber lobbyist, received a copy of the names on our task force from the city. You know, to me, that calls into question the integrity of the entire process. So back to your analogy, Mr. Hales, it appears our measure isn't merely out of calibration, but it's been tampered with. So for the integrity of the process, we need to wait for that investigation. Okay. So trade dress and cameras. These have been working to keep cab passengers safe for decades. Why change that? You know, because, again, Uber's responsible. We don't want to. Okay, full commercial coverage. Why change that? It's not we can't afford it. It's we don't want to. I would be curious. Maybe you can ask an Uber representative for the number. Give me just a moment. Because they're coming in here, and they're eating our lunch, and it's because they raise a ton of venture capital. They operate at losses. Both companies last fiscal year operated a huge loss. And it's because, one, their lobbying expense. Two, because they give out a ton of free rides, okay? They could easily, I bet if you compare that number of dollars given to their drivers in free rides that were given to their passengers, but they paid it to their drivers, compare that number to what it would cost to get full trade dress visible from all sides so you don't have people hopping into a car with some predator, to get front and back facing cameras, to prevent tragedies before they happen instead of having a rating system that responds after they happen. Okay, and full commercial insurance so that when a tragedy does happen, like the pedestrian couple that got hit by Northwest Cooch by an Uber driver, the company responded saying he wasn't on the platform at the time. Maybe he was picking up street hails, because you have to be naive to think that's not happening, okay? So how much would all that cost compared to how many free rides they're giving away? They could compete on a level playing field without asking you to reduce their expenses relative to us, and using that money to give out rides at, after all the freebies, probably a much lower cost than we do, because we can't afford to give out $10, $20 off.
Need to cut you off. You've got extra time, so thank you very much. Thank you. Okay, let's take the next folks, please.
All right, next three, please. Ryan Hashigan, Kirk Foster, Nona Carrasco.
You were mentioned by the city auditor, too, Mr. Hales.
They'll be followed by Jeanette Tiber,
as we know,
Dan DeGrange, and Dick Warrenhoff.
Hello, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Ryan Hashigan, and I run Portland Pedicabs. I'm very surprised to be here today, as I and our industry were told repeatedly by city staff there was no reason to attend Innovation Task Force meetings, as it would not apply to our industry. Yet 2 days before the first hearing of this code, our industry received a new code that not only included us, but completely overhauled the rules around our industry with no input from anyone in our industry. The final report of the Innovation Task Force said in highlighted text, quote, non-vehicular forms of PFHT, such as pedicabs and horse-drawn carriages, are not addressed in these recommendations. PBOT staff indicates that it will be reviewing the program for non-vehicular LPT at a future time. So I'm surprised to be here. We've been told in the last week that these changes to our industry are just small edits or formatting, but they overhaul our training, driver certification, and our operations. All of these issues are ones that the TNCs and taxis spent 2 years discussing for their industries. This is deja vu to the private for hire overhaul of 2009, where pedicabs were thrown in as an afterthought with boilerplate language requiring automobile insurance and driver's licenses. We actually have insurance in excess of the proposed TNC phase one insurance of $1 million, but we can't buy auto insurance. Commissioner Saltzman and council in 2009 saved the day with a thoughtful amendment that created a task force for pedicabs that was supposed to report back to council in 60 to 90 days with a separate code written for pedicabs and non-motorized providers. It took 4 years of us working within the system to make this a priority for revenue and PFH staff. After 4 years, we got a unanimous vote from our task force and also a unanimous vote from the Private for Hire Board of Review, which is pretty remarkable, supporting a new code, Section 1641, Non-Motorized Transport, that was written by the city attorney and that was specific to our industry. We were waiting for a council date for this code rewrite when Uber showed up, started making threats and hiring lobbyists. and our industry got pushed aside. As the city overhauls TNC and taxi codes, we were told not to attend the task force meetings, and then, as they did not apply to us, and then were thrown in at the last minute. Amendments were made today to the most glaring and embarrassing oversights, like requiring us to have auto insurance and driver's licenses. This new code is not the same as the previous code. It is not just minor edits. It completely changes how we conduct business. Bans on things like dynamic pricing reminds us of being previously thrown into boilerplate taxi language. Just this time, it's boilerplate Uber code. I urge you to stick to the original plan and not include pedicabs in this overhaul, as we had no involvement in this process that dramatically affects our industry. We were told this was about TNCs and taxis, and the task force did not apply to us in the first place. The TNCs and taxis got a 2-year process debating these issues, whereas pedicabs got 2 days. Please use the original plan of separating non-motorized transport from the code into 1641 and allow our industry to provide input on these new rules that affect our livelihood. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Do we need a motion to strip them out?
Well, let's get staff back up and find out what's in the package.
I think Dan and I were prepared to bring such a motion.
I understand, but let's find out what's there. Thank you. Go ahead.
Yeah, my name's Kirk Foster. I'm the Wapato Shores Transport and also still the SAT rep on the Private Friar Board, as long as it still exists. 2 points I wanted to bring up related to the taxi and TNCs. One, the fingerprint that Patricia brought up, mm-hmm. There's no reason not to do fingerprints. It's easy. It's cheap. There's a new organization called Fieldprint that is putting their terminals in, convenience in places like UPS stores all over the place. It's easy. There's no reason not to do it. The molestation case that she referred to in the late 90s taught TriMet and all other regulatory bodies that work in this everywhere in the state, fingerprints are necessary. The city of Portland is the only government agency that we work with anywhere in the state of Oregon that does not require fingerprints. And that's something everyone should kind of think about. Your city of Portland's way behind the times on the fingerprint issue. Insurance also, the new insurance language references making the TNCs primary. We do have a contract with Lyft to supplement their wave service in which we provide insurance. And so we're providing Lyft with 1.5 million coverage in all periods for whenever they're using us as supplemental. So the code would prevent that and actually reduce the service, the level of insurance, by making them primary. So that's something that should be addressed as well. Those are the points I intended to make. I, like Mr. Hashigan, am in the same boat, surprised to be here on this topic, because our industry, the NEMT and SAT industry, was told the same thing throughout this entire process, that we didn't need to participate because our industry would be addressed after the fact as well. Nothing in the wave industry or NEMT, which is completely different than taxis and TNCs, has ever been discussed in any depth at any of the meetings. And our code was completely rewritten as far as our requirements as well. And there are a lot of things that are specific to our industry. For example, this new code rewrite that appears to have just been a copy and paste job from the TNC regulations requires all of our employees to have a business license to work for us. It requires all of our employees to own a personal car so that they can have personal auto insurance in order to work as employees. We have $1.5 or $2 million coverage depending on our region in the state. And yet my employees are supposed to go buy a car. Most of my employees don't own cars. And so they would have to basically, I'd have to let them all go unless they go buy a car and get personal insurance under this code. It just doesn't make any sense. Why would any of my employees need a business license under this code? The reason I bring this up is these things are easy to change, but this brings it up because there's been a complete and utter lack of process in the other industries. And so I think there should be an amendment to remove those and revisit those later as well, because no other industry other than taxi and TNCs has been allowed any participation or comment on any of this. And those basic things are just things I'd like to point out. Another issue, I have not been able to find a single member of the city staff, the PHFFS, that says they were allowed to read or vet this prior to being submitted to council. Nobody in the city staff saw this first. There are tons of mistakes like I've just referenced. There are clear errors that were made in this that would have been picked up by anybody with experience in the industry or by city staff had they had an opportunity to review it. But again, I have found no member of city staff that was able to review this prior to it being submitted to council. And so the whole thing really needs to be taken a look at and at least allow the city staff to review it before you vote on it, which hasn't really been done at this point. And another thing that I wanted to point out that wasn't put in is you're talking about lack of coverage for wave transport being a huge part of this, even though the wave industry has been basically excluded from most of the discussions because that's us, the NEMT part, that we're told to wait.
Could you just tell me the acronyms? I'm getting lost because I don't know what the WAV is, the wheelchair access vehicle, but what is the
NEMT is the national reference for non-emergency medical transportation that looks to be adopted by the new city code. SAT is Portland's an acronym for specially attended transportation, which is essentially the same thing functionally.
And that's the one that when you're providing it, you have the primary insurance rather than the TNC, is that correct?
Yes, that's the contract we have with Lyft. We provide primary insurance during all phases while we're providing that wave service for them. But that's kind of a separate side point.
We'll get staff back up at the end of this hearing and get
information
about what is being done or not done in this code proposal.
It should be brought up. There's another issue.
Cabs and SATs and other parties to the transportation system other than the two we've been hearing from at great length on this controversy, which are cabs and TNCs. So we might need you to come back, but let me get them up here.
There's one other point for the wave coverage that needs to be addressed. I believe it was in 2012 there was a motion made to reduce the vehicle age for wave vehicles to 10 years. There was a great outcry that there's a lot of companies that would simply not be able to replace their fleet fast enough to go into that. So the city made an agreement with all wave providers, taxi companies, everybody, that if you had a vehicle that was permitted with the city prior to 2012 and continuously permitted, that vehicle could be used until it reached an age of 15 years. And the code rewrite eliminates that agreement the city made with the entire wave community. And again, had this been reviewed by people familiar with this, that would have been caught, but it wasn't caught. So you've got lots of companies out there that have an agreement with the city that they can use any vehicle till it reaches 15 years as long as it was permitted prior to the change in 2012, I believe it was. And yet that has been completely eliminated. So you have a significant portion of the fleet, which I've been trying to get numbers, but nobody seems to have the exact numbers. But I would say estimated in the neighborhood of 30% of the fleet that will have to be decommissioned immediately when this code takes effect because they're more than 10 years old. And all the providers have that assurance from the city they can use them till 15 years. And that, of course, was missed too. And this new code is rife with examples like that of things that were completely missed because staff and the provider community was not allowed to even look at this before it was sent to the commission.
Okay. Thank you. Yes, please.
Nona Carrasco, Radio Cab. You know me by now. So I wanted to talk about the 50 cents per ride idea. It is my understanding that this is to further the enforcement and accountability of the TNCs, and I am all for accountability, and I am all for further enforcement. However, this is not exactly the way to go about this. This 50 cents a ride would either fall on me, a cab driver, my income has already gone down as it is. Last week, I worked six nights. I worked Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. I took Friday off because I needed a day off, and then I worked Saturday, Sunday. I took last night off so I can be here today, and I will be working the rest of this week. Last week, I still made about half as much as I did last year when I only worked four nights a week. So that would either fall on me, that 50 cents a ride, or it would fall on the shareholders, which would triple the amount of permitting fees that they're already paying for the city plate on the back of each cab, or it would fall on, as Novick said, our consumers, our riders. Every person I get in my cab, 9 out of 10 times, those are loyal cab customers. They would never take TNCs. And I've actually talked with them about this lately, and they said, why would I want to pay 50 cents, even 50 cents, towards the further enforcement of TNCs? I would never take an Uber or Lyft. So, like I said, I'm all for accountability. When I became a cab driver, I went in to Radio Cab, and I got interviewed by Charlie and Noah, two of the superintendents. After that, I went in person down to the city, and I paid the fee to have my background check done by the city in person. So I was able to actually prove I was who I was. And I'm also all for the fingerprinting. I also, once that came back clear, which it came back pretty fast for me because I was already in the system as a social worker, and I had worked with vulnerable developmentally disabled adults for 16 years. I was already in the system getting those background checks every year. I also, so that fee was a non-refundable fee. I also paid for the permit once I passed the test in person. I met the five-year requirement to drive radio cab. I also got training, and during training I was assessed for my knowledge of the city and my appropriateness with my passengers. I now train and assess other drivers. I pick up my cab at radio cab, so the superintendents and other staff, they see me when I come in. They see that I'm okay to drive it, you know. I also am supervised throughout my 12-hour shift. I have dispatch looking over at me at all times. My cab is clearly marked with the phone number on the cab as well as the cab number. And how do you enforce rules on 24/7 on regular cars with one decal that you can see in the front? I have one of these too.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I have a question because you and I had some correspondence about the defensive driving class. Are you, as a radio cab driver, required to take defensive driving class?
Absolutely.
How often?
Every 2 years. And if an incident occurs or if anything happens, I can be required to take one immediately.
And are there other things that happen periodically other than just the first certification that you went through? Are there other requirements to continue being a radio cab driver that you have to, like defensive driving is every 2 years. Are there other things that you have to keep doing?
I also have to go in and get recertified every year.
Oh, every year you have to get recertified.
Yeah, I have to go in and renew my permit, which I actually was going to bring my permit. My permit also has my picture on it, and that's displayed in my cab. I do have some recommendations.
Okay, but why don't you provide? No, we're not going to. This is not a work session. So let me thank you because we're going to get staff back up here. We got lots of questions from the testimony that's come in. I want to make sure we have a chance to do that. So
I know that the cab drivers have put a lot of time in that. If you could just give us your top two recommendations, please.
I think that all TNCs should have lived here for at least 5 years. I would like to know.
The people driving or the company?
The people driving TNCs.
That's not constitutional. We can't do that. So what's your next?
That's a requirement for me to drive radio cab.
I don't believe it's the city's requirement, but keep going.
I would actually like to know how long the person that hit those two pedestrians last week, I would like to know how long he had lived here. I'm almost willing to bet he just moved up here within the last 6 months.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay. Let's take more testimony, please.
And we have our final three, Jeanette Tiber, Dan DeGrange, and Dick Horninghoff.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
Hi, I'm Dan DeGrange. I'm with Propel Insurance. And I've been providing insurance to the livery industry in the Western United States for the past decade. And I want to share with you some important loss data from my insureds in Portland and other cities throughout the West. In Portland, my insureds claims data reveals that most of their claims occur before period 2 and 3. But before getting into the specific details of the claims data, I think it is important to share with you some statistics about how many accidents livery companies have annually in Portland and other cities. The cities that I currently have insureds in is Portland, Seattle, San Francisco, Phoenix, and Los Angeles. The lowest accident occurrence rate for the livery industry is a half of an accident per car per year. So if you had 200 cars, the best run company would have 100 accidents. The highest accident occurrence for the livery industry that I've seen is almost 2 accidents per car per year. The high accident occurrence rate almost always occurs in those cities with high driver turnover and inexperienced drivers. The low accident occurrence rate occurs with those cab companies or livery companies that have experienced drivers, and those companies spend a great deal of time and money training their drivers to be safe. So let's get into the actual claims data in the city of Portland. Steve Entler, the GM at Radio Cab, pulled all of his claim files from the past 4 years. And in that 4 years, they had a total of 753 accidents. 221 of those accidents